I'm Gabby, Jules, Blue Skies over West London. Jules, what a weekend.
Incredible.
We have the Rome Derby. We have three red cards in less than a minute in the United Fulham game. We have Juve and Inter with controversy. We have Paris Saint-Germain losing. We have Bayern losing.
Incredible.
I'm probably forgetting something. We have another hat trick from that Norwegian guy. But we have to start with the biggest game in the world, because it is the biggest game in the world. Barcelona beating Real Madrid 2-1. At the Bernabeu. The lead is now 12 points.
Yeah.
Is it game over? What percentage game over is it?
12 games to go, so it's still 36 points on the table. But I think 12 points, the gap is massive. It really is. I don't see Barca losing. I don't see Real Madrid winning every all of them, 12 of them. And then in the same time, Barcelona, who only have, let's not forget, apart from the Copa del Rey, the semi-final second leg to play against Real Madrid, by the way, again, at the Camp Nou, but don't have any European competition to play. So it's
that
basically
is a game
one
changer.
Game a week. So for me, no I Liga, as they say, and Barcelona will have their first Liga in 4 years. Let's not forget, 4 years is a long time for a club like that, for not winning the domestic title.
It certainly feels that way. It would take an enormous collapse.
Yeah.
You know, based on my very scientific Marcanti principle, is if your lead is greater than the remaining games left in the season or equal to, you will probably win the Premier League, right? Or you probably win whatever title you're in. In terms of this game, Carlo Ancelotti came out afterwards. And look, I'll give you my capsule of the game, and unless you want to heavily dispute it, I thought Barcelona came out better, perhaps because they were at home. I thought they created some chances without completely dominating in the first half. So that even though Real Madrid took the lead against the run of play with Araujo on goal, Barcelona getting the equalizer just before the break, might have been a different story there, the ball pinballing around, whatever. But then in the second half, until Carlo made those substitutions, I thought Barcelona were still in control. Barcelona said, points, great, fine. I didn't see Real Madrid getting back into it. And then he makes the substitutions, and then there's the Asensio goal, which gets called off for offside. In real time, it looked very, very close.
Yeah.
I've been conditioned after 5 years of VAR and saying like, oh, that looks really, really close. Let's see what VAR says, and whatever VAR says is gospel.
Yeah.
It is to me, right? They do not have semi-automatic offsides. Kind of thought differently, though.
He just said that it's not 100%. He's not 100% convinced, and he said there's not 100% proof that Asensio is actually offside on Koundé.
The laws say, do we need 100% proof?
But I thought VAR gave you that anyway, with the lines and everything.
There is no clear and obvious error threshold with offsides. You and I know that. I'm pretty sure Carlo knows it too.
I know. You can see his frustration, though, because he thought they'd won the game.
Yeah.
It's 82nd or 83rd minute.
Marco Asensio certainly thought he'd won the game too. Yeah. I think that frustration probably also stems from the fact that, look, in the end, should they somehow come back and get in, and make it close at the end of the season, they can look back and say, this one call, these millimeters cost us the title.
The title, yeah.
Fine. But I always refer, we bring this up with VAR, I always refer you back to what it was like pre-VAR.
Yeah.
You would have had an assistant referee making a call in a split second, because that is so tight. I don't see how a human referee can necessarily get it, be 100% one way or the other,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And no matter what call he makes, he will either get in Spain, he will either get savaged and crucified by the Madrid press or by the Barcelona press. Here instead, some people are savaging VAR, which is a protocol, a machine, which is fine. One interesting aspect of this is it's customary, and I think it's a wonderful custom that they have in La Liga, is before every game, the two presidents of the team, they have a gala lunch or gala meal, and they sit together next to each other. Florentino did not show up game. The gala lunch was canceled. Most people interpret it, because obviously Florentino and John Laporta had been working together quite closely on Super League issues and whatnot. A lot of people say, or the stock answer is, well, Florentino is part of the civil suit, or Real Madrid are part of the civil suit against Barcelona in the Negreira refereeing case. I mean, I'm assuming that's why he didn't feel he should show up. Personally, I think Florentino looks at the situation. This is my interpretation of Florentino. Why he didn't sign the paper straight away. I don't think he's particularly fussed about this because there's no sporting sanctions and no points penalty. So it's not like Barcelona are going to be stripped of the title this year.
Yeah.
He needs Laporta's help with his Super League plans. You know, if Real Madrid could draw benefit on the pitch, fine. But all they're going to do is fine Barcelona. Am I wrong in this?
No, maybe he thought, like, you know, it's time to take our distances a little bit with Barcelona.
Because a lot of fans are very, Real Madrid fans are very, very
angry. Yeah. So he said maybe it's better not to be seen with him and with, you know, in that gala. Maybe people can think it's a show of support or something like that. I don't know. It's just the decision that he took. But we kind of knew it anyway. So it was not a big surprise.
All right, Jose, I want to spend a little more time on this because, as you know, like, Super League is something I've covered very closely. I'm really interested in the implications of this. Bernd Reichert, who is the CEO of A22 Sports, was there at the game.
Of course he was.
Well, you say that, but very few people have actually met him in the flesh to the point that, I mean, I remember joking with somebody from the ECA about whether he was real, he was a real person, or whether he was just some...
He was given interviews and everything.
Yeah, on video, right, where he turns to the camera and he says, like, no, but it's not hard to sort of CGI generate German-looking dude. No, I'm joking.
Pep Guardiola was there as well, by the way.
Pep was there as well, yes. But let's get back to Florentino, who was not there. I have the sense that, all right, obviously right now, if you're Florentino, you look around to your Super League allies. And obviously, he believes in the project. He wants the project. He believed in the project 10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
But strategically, you're looking around and realistically, also because, let's face it, you rewrote the rules so that only you could realistically be elected president. Plus, you win the Champions League most years, so you're fine. Like, so you're in a situation where you're effectively Real Madrid president for life. But you still care about having the support of Madridismo because you know.
Yeah, of course.
And I've been critical of him many times in the past. I've praised him. But he knows that Real Madrid as a football club, that type of club, is only as strong as the fans, the Madridismo, the belief of the people behind them.
Yeah.
And I get a sense that while there are a lot of Real Madrid fans in the diaspora across the world who, you know, watch on TV and stuff like that, who would love the idea of a Super League because maybe they don't have the same historic cultural connection that people who might be Spanish and go to the games do.
Yeah.
They believe in it. I think there's a big chunk of Real Madrid fans who do have a connection because they're in Spain. They've been, you know, their grandparents, their abuelos were Real Madrid members or whatever, who believe the Super League is necessary because they don't trust UEFA or the game is changing and, you know, that's fine. But I also think there is a big chunk of Real Madrid fans who say, hang on a second, we're not 100% on board with the Super League.
Yeah.
At the same time, certainly the Ultra Sur have made that point. Others have made that point. People who want a more traditional type of Spanish football want that. And at the same time, what they're really not on board is, we don't want the Super League at the expense of us bending over and ignoring what Barcelona might have done in the Negreira case.
Yeah.
So I think that is why, after initially kind of, you know, voting present, to use a term from Congress, he had the club go in the civil suit and why he needs to get some distance. And I wonder if this distance is also has him thinking, wait a minute, who are my allies in this project right now? What strong allies can I count on, right? And you've got Juventus with their 15-point penalty, criminal investigations left, right, and center. Andrea Agnelli gone.
Yeah.
And you have Barcelona with the levers, now with the Negreira case, with uncertainty over revenue, over future, and whatever. And he says, am I really in this strong position on my own? Where are my peeps? Where are my allies, right?
It's true.
He knows that Milan and Inter will jump back in. You know, he knows that Atleti will. But two of those three clubs also have serious issues of their own.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if he isn't ready. I don't want to say pause it. He's going to wait for the ECJ judgment.
Yeah.
He's not giving up on it. But it's also, I think he feels this is not the time to really go and push this. let's let Bernd Riker go and kind of be the face of things and do his consultations, and let's let the court, you know, do their job.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just, there was no point him taking the risk to be seen with Laporta and then imagine the headlines or to make the Real Madrid fans not happy or furious or anything. You don't go, Laporta is not going to hold it against you anyway. He can completely understand why you're not coming over. Okay, it looks strange because for so many years we used to have, I mean, for every single game we used to have the two president of the two Spanish clubs fighting each other, Clásico or not Clásico, sat next to each other in the stands. Not this time. It's okay. There were other people there from the club. It's, you know.
All right, let's go back to the game. Let's start with Barcelona. We've made the point that this is a much tougher-minded Barcelona. It's a much more direct Barcelona right now. I think that's also because of the absence of Pedri. I think that's a... As a style of play, you know, they always talk about controlling games and stuff. I think they're controlling games now by being direct, which probably suits Rafinha, suits Lewandowski, because that's what he was used to before. I'm not saying these guys can't play in different ways, right? But we saw it again, but were you surprised when he put Sergio Roberto ahead of the president, Frank Kessie?
Yeah, I thought I was a bit surprised. I wanted Kessie to start, to be fair. I thought they would be far more effective with him. As you know, and everybody knows, I'm not a Sergio Roberto fan anyway. To be fair, he scored, apart from the goal, not too convinced of what he did anyway, but Xavi seems happy with him after the game, saying he understands well the tactics, when to go forward, when to press, when to go and help Araujo. Okay, fair enough. Maybe I didn't see that enough. But to be fair, and Xavi also said, I was between two minds before the game, who started Kessie, started Sergi. And in the end, they both scored, both had an impact. So well done to him, to be fair. To Xavi, we can't really criticize him for picking Sergio Roberto instead of Kessie, because in the end, it worked. I just really like that midfield four, whether it's with Kessie or Pedri and Gavi, Busquets and De Jong, whoever are the four. I just like it. And I think that when they were a goal down, They still could press high the way they do as soon as the triggers were there. And then when they came back to 1-1 and controlled the game a bit more, they did, and they still had some verticality. I like the Young's game. And in the end, even if a lot seems to rely on Rafinha's creativity, on the second goal, you could see that Balde can kind of utilizes all that sort of space on the left because they don't have a proper left winger like they have on the right hand side, and they did that, and maybe they should have done that a bit more through the game, because it clearly worked on that second goal, even if it was down to the moment of genius for Lewandowski, because that backheel is really what made that goal, and that was amazing from Lewandowski.
Yeah, so Balde down the left, I think that really has been one of the real intuitions of Xavi this season, you know. And I think sometimes we deserve, I'm biased because I like Xavi, right? But yeah, I think he deserves a lot of credit for, when you think about it, the way they've been winning this season, the way they've been successful, it's not been the lever superstars. You know, obviously they've been a part of it, right? But a lot of it has been, you know, putting your trust in Balde. Remember at the start, they had Jordi Alba, and they went and they got Marcos Alonso, right? So you had two other options down the left. You know, they even played Balde right back. It looked like he was somebody who was like, hey, you know, you might be on the junior Firpo plan, right? And yet he put his faith in him, and I think Balde has really responded.
I mean, it's pretty obvious that he's the best of the three by far.
Well, it's obvious now because we see him.
It must have been the case at training. That's why he starts him.
But it's not that obvious. A lot of managers, especially younger managers, where the club says, wait, we just gave Marcos Alonso a big contract. Jordi Alba won Champions Leagues. Right, you have to know when to do that. Right?
Yeah, no, true.
Who is this Balde guy? Right.
Yeah.
Where'd you find him? The other big call that he made in this game, I thought, was again flipping Araujo and Koundé. I thought that was interesting because you've got two guys, effectively Araujo and Koundé, dealing with the two biggest attacking threats on the other side.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's a weird symmetry there too, if you want, between the two teams, because, yeah, nominally, it's 4-3-3 on both teams. In practice, Gavi and Valverde are both inside, you have two asymmetric lines.
Yeah.
And I was curious about the Araujo against Vinicius and the Koundé against Benzema battles. I thought Benzema had a poor game. And you can say, we were talking about it off air, you said, oh, but Koundé was great.
Yeah, I thought Koundé was really good.
fine, but Benzema, you know, was Benzema good and Koundé made him look less good? Or is there an issue with Benzema right now?
I don't think there is. I just don't think the service, there's a couple of crosses that went just behind him, for example. There's a couple of passes and he looked frustrated at times by people around him not being sharp enough, not making the right pass. And I don't think he was as his sharpest either.
I don't think the team helped him. Well, could it have been also because I thought he had to move around a lot more than you would normally expect him to do in this type of game? And yeah. I'm wondering if some of the... I agree, he didn't get great service. Koundé did a good job on him. I just thought he had to really move to try to find space. And that, I mean, we know he can do that because he's, as you said in the past, he's the best nine and the best ten.
Yeah.
But if he moves around, then there's nobody through the middle. Now, Vini against Araujo, I thought was interesting. There was a stat that came up on Liga TV saying that Vini was only successful in two of his six dribbles in the game.
Yeah.
It looked like he's always coming inside on Araujo. And Araujo obviously knows that.
Yeah.
On
this case, he didn't use at all the outside. He very often more uses the coming inside than going on the outside. But he's done it before. We've seen that recently against Real Madrid, for example, against Liverpool.
And maybe, he's more of a two-footed player, I think, than people give him credit
for. Yeah, and even Carlo before the game said he can play on the right. Okay, you can say Carlo, but why'd you never try it? I don't know. But maybe he felt that Araujo being right-footed, if you go on the outside, you're even more onto what Araujo is very good at. If you come inside, you're onto his left foot and maybe he's not as comfortable. And certainly at the beginning of the game, by the way, he goes on the outside on the goal. On the Araujo goal. And then he goes inside at some point, which is not a nutmeg, but it looks like a nutmeg a little bit when you watch it first time. But that's the only time really where it works. After that, I thought Araujo did really well. And then let's not forget that Araujo is key on the first Barca goal as well by going forward. Oh, and then the cross goes to Sergio Roberto eventually after the sort of ping pong. So that, I thought that battle was amazing. It's not the first time. I think every time they're going to switch now. Every time they play each other, so we will see that again, I suspect, in the Copa del Rey semi-final second leg. And then at some point we'll see how Vinicius reacts, and maybe he will have to be a bit more unpredictable, because you're right, at some point he was too predictable what he was trying to do.
It's interesting, we talk about them switching, right? Benzema is really, really good in the air. I would have thought Araujo would be better defending in the air than Jules Koundé.
But then the ball never came. I mean, I don't think Benzema had a header yesterday.
But that brings me to us questioning Carlo here and questioning some things that Carlo could have done differently. One is delivering more aerial service to Benzema. And you can say it's not your game, but if I have Koundé on Benzema, I'm not saying it's a mismatch, but it certainly favors Benzema. Right? Yeah. Koundé jumps high and whatever, but... So does Benzema, and Benzema is what, like 10 centimeters? Maybe not 10, but
he's taller than him.
He's 6 or 7 centimeters taller,
right?
Yeah. And maybe Araujo could have dealt with it. Yeah, obviously, there's give or take. Otherwise, you leave Koundé against Vini. That was one thing which I think if he had to do it again, I think he would do things a little bit differently. The other thing is we know Real Madrid are a very lopsided team. Most of the attack comes down the left, I think, for pretty obvious reasons, It's Modric ends up gravitating, hitting balls that way, and you also had Camavinga left-footed at the base of three. But when he did make the changes, Carvajal had a highway on the right-hand side. Is that something that he should have done sooner?
Yeah, I thought so. I wondered if I have time, he would change, or certainly on the hour. Maybe he left a little bit late. I don't know, that the game was so in the balance. Even if, as we said, Barcelona had control of the game in that second half after they scored the goal just before the break, I wonder if again, Real Madrid became too predictable in that second half. And as soon as he changed, when you bring Asensio, Rodrigo, and you go for it like they did, and you expose yourself defensively, that's how the second goal comes from Barcelona. At least you put a lot of doubt into the Barcelona back four. So, okay, who's there? Who's on my side? There's more fluidity. Asensio scores his goal on the far post, for example, when it was supposedly to be as a right winger. So all of that, I think, disturbs massively the other team, which when you don't make the changes, is very much like, you know, Valverde is there, Vini is there, Karim is there, and the rest is still very, okay, this is what Barca prepared before the game. And yeah, I thought maybe Rodrigo came on quite early, but I think the others could have also come earlier.
And that brings me to my final point here, and you can tell me if you agree or disagree, right? Barcelona deserved to win, but if that Asensio goal had scored, had counted,
yeah,
we would be sitting here praising Carlo's game plan,
yeah,
and saying they deserve to win, because I think we can both agree that if that goal goes in, Barcelona don't score the winner on the counter, right?
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. You're right.
That's football, right?
Yeah, yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. But overall, if you look at it now, it's an offside goal. It's an offside goal. They still didn't create enough for Real Madrid. It's a known goal they scored. And then the other one they could have scored, because really there's not much in between, to be fair.
But it would have been a deserved win.
It would have been, in the sense that it would have...
If Asensio had been a centimeter onside.
I'm not sure if it would have been deserved in this.
We would be praising Carlo's game plan.
Yeah, and his coaching especially, because at 1-1 it was not good enough. Then he made the substitution, and then the substitute wins you the game. Perfect. I still felt that Barca had a bit more to them in that game. And maybe, you know what, maybe I did think Real Madrid scored too early, and that kind of disturbed a little bit their game plan, because after that he felt all they wanted to do is keep the ball to keep that score, to keep the scoreline really. And I think that's a bit counterproductive for them.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Maybe showing Barcelona a little too much respect in the way you play. But the reason I brought that whole thing up is just about football's all about narratives. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Jules, enough Clásico. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Manchester United come from behind to beat Fulham 3-1 in the FA Cup. Yeah. Jules, you're through, but it didn't help that Fulham got 3 red cards and conceded 2 goals in the space of a minute or so.
Incredible. I mean, 3 red cards in 36 seconds, I think it was. One for Willian for handing the ball on the line.
Which, by the way, on that one, if Willian doesn't reach out, look, I'm not blaming him, but it's ironic that if he doesn't reach out like that, I think there's a very good chance he gets in the way of the ball with his leg.
But I thought he should have anyway. I thought he had enough time to lift his leg a little bit more to block the ball. I don't understand why he goes with his arm. I mean, I think it must be bad reflex.
Yeah,
that's it, like you do sometimes, you know. But
right.
I completely agree with you. This was savable by him without using his arm. But he gets a red. Marco Silva goes mad. He gets a red. Mitrovic goes even madder. Gets a red, and that suspension coming up will be big, because he clearly like barges into the ref or grabs the referee, Chris Kavanagh. And Fulham said afterwards, and Marco Silva, oh, we've got history. He robbed us before in the West Ham game. And fair enough. And Chris Kavanagh is not a good referee anyway. We've said that many times on the show. But on this one, I don't know what you can complain about.
Yeah, I don't understand at all. I don't understand. It's video. It's video. It's just very obvious video.
Yeah.
And the rules state that Willian has to go off. I'll tell you who did not need to go off is Mitrovic.
Yeah.
And you're letting your club down when you behave like that.
You're still in the game.
You're still in the game. Not just that, but Fulham have been playing really well.
They were
really
the better team for 75 minutes.
You know, United did not play well.
No.
I just thought that was
it's crazy.
Extraordinary.
And sticking with United, Gab, reports suggest that the club is preparing a new deal for Erik ten Hag, who obviously just arrived last summer and signed through June 2025 in that contract last summer. Does that make sense to you?
No, it didn't make zero sense to me.
Well, you don't like rewarding people for doing a good job?
I love rewarding people for doing a good job.
So give them a pay rise.
The reason it doesn't make sense to me, and the reason if I'm Ten Hag, I would advise them not to take whatever deal is on offer, is that the club is up for sale. There are new owners coming in, or maybe not.
Yeah.
When you negotiate a new deal, you don't just negotiate about getting more money. You negotiate about certain levels of powers, how your relationship with Fletcher and Murta and stuff like that. This is all stuff which I think to Erik ten Hag is just as important as getting more money. Who are you negotiating with? Are you negotiating with the Glazers who are in charge now? Are you negotiating with somebody else who could be in charge a little later? I think it's very important, especially given the kind of season that United are having. A new contract is going to be a priority for the new owner if this gets wrapped up.
But maybe he wants it done before the sale. For this reason, because he can deal straight with Richard Arnold, who might not be there once the club is sold.
But that would be a bad thing, because then...
But then the contract is there at least. Imagine that Richard Arnold goes and the new guy...
I think it's reasonable that he get an extension. I think he certainly did an exceptional job. I just don't know that it's strategically smart for him or for United.
Yeah.
Because remember, selling a club with a manager with a big contract attached to it can diminish the value of the club, right?
Unless the manager is good like him.
But you don't know what's going to happen. Maybe it falls apart. So... I think if I'm Ten Hag, I bide my time a little bit. You'll get the contract. Two VAR penalties give Bayer Leverkusen and Xabi Alonso a 2-1 win over Bayern Munich, who slipped to second place, Jules.
Yes, they're a point behind Dortmund, who we will talk about it later, smashed Cologne on Saturday. Bayern didn't play well, even if they were in the lead. I'm not really sure what Nagelsmann tried to do at halftime with three substitutions. Even if they were not playing great, at least they were in the lead. And... kind of controlling the game. Okay, second half, I thought they fell apart completely. Amin Adli, who is the good Adli, by the way, not the bad Adli from Milan, with two pens in something that I've never seen before, Gab, because the first time he goes down, the ref gives him a yellow for simulation and doesn't give the pen, and then he's called by VAR to say that there was a foul. So rescind the yellow card, give the penalty. Palacio scores, and then same on the second one. He thinks he dives, he gives him a yellow for simulation, goes to see the screen.
The second one
was obvious, though.
On the first one, he loses his foot. I don't blame the referee. He loses his boot. The only way you're going to lose your boot if you're an adult and you tie your shoelaces is if somebody interferes with your foot.
100%.
The second one, why are you tackling him right there on the line?
But just from Upamecano, it makes no sense whatsoever.
Such a bad decision from Upamecano.
Completely. And then... Palacio scores again, puts the same spot at the penalty. And to be fair, Bayer Leverkusen deserve their win. He's doing a really good job, Xabi Alonso, with them. They should be higher up in the, because they've got so much potential, but the first half of the season was so bad. But yeah,
they'll win the Europa League.
Yeah, exactly. Julian Nagelsmann was angry even before the game. He was angry after, of course, but even before the game, Gab, because several tactical documents that were prepared for this game ended up in the papers, and he says there's a mole in the camp.
Yeah, and obviously this comes on the back of all the business before with Neuer and his friend Tapalovic and whatever else. And these are documents that supposedly explained the idea behind his change in tactical system. I don't think it's a big deal in terms of they leaked any sensitive information. It's a big deal in the sense that you, as a professional footballer, you're given these documents and you actually share the actual document. They had screenshots of these things.
I mean, it doesn't have to be a player.
No, it doesn't. It might not be a player. It's somebody in the camp.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But somebody's employed by the club.
But every club has, though. How those things come out?
I don't know. Buyer, next time, please watermark those documents. And then when Bill publishes them, we'll know who's responsible. Are you ready for your main course?
Yes.
More quick hits.
Yes.
Tottenham Hotspur throw away 3-1 lead with 15 minutes to go and our health at Southampton.
Wow.
And I remind you, our bottom of the table, 3-3.
Yeah.
Jules, we'll get to what happened after the game in a moment. Can you just tell me what happened on the pitch to explain this collapse?
They just switched off completely, stopped playing. It was as simple as, I don't know what happened in the player's mind. I don't know if Conte could have done something different from the bench, realizing pretty quickly that the... just everything dropped.
Sub himself on instead of Højbjerg, because I guarantee you, with Conte out there, the guy who skips past Højbjerg, he would have gotten a big kick in the cojones.
Big time.
He would have gone nowhere.
I know. I don't know. I think coaching maybe is one of the reasons. I just think that psychologically, they just were not there anymore. And to be fair, I think Southampton felt there was something there, went for it, kept playing the way they did. Even if you consider 4, you're already 3-1 down. So losing 4-1 or 3-1 doesn't make a difference. So at least go for it. They went for it. And And yeah, and that you can discuss that penalty or not. I thought it was a pen. And I thought in the end, Southampton deserved the draw. And Antonio Conte reacted after the result, of course, Gab, with an almighty rant in which he called the players selfish and pointed out that the owners had responsibility too, since the club had won almost nothing in 20 odd years. Gab, what's your reading?
All right. So there's a couple of things to unpack here. First of all, on the idea of culture and winning culture and winners and stuff like that. So this is something that I struggle to relate to, in the sense it's not something that I can touch and feel or even count. So I have to go by players and managers. A lot of players and managers say there is such a thing as a winning culture at a club. And these are people who've won, and I have to take their word for it. Mm. And I think that culture comes from, not from the coach, but it comes from the organization. We've talked about it before. You look at, you know, Chelsea in the Abramovich era, the managers kept changing, right? Managers can help. They can be part of the solution, but it has to come from the top. I don't see that as a reason to throw Levi and Joe Louis under the bus, frankly. I mean, poor Joe Louis, he's a million years old, but Daniel Levy under the bus.
Yeah, but he made mistakes too.
Do it directly. Yeah, he might have made mistakes, but I mean, I think he's certainly committed to the club. Calling the players out, normally you only do in public. You normally only do this if you think you're going to get the desired reaction. It's very rare for it to happen. We saw it, and I love bringing this up, with the late Gerard Houllier and David Ginola many, many years ago, right?
But Conte's done it before, too. It's not the first time. Even
I think when you call somebody selfish, I mean, that is a big, big word. Not working for each other, whatever you mean by it. I mean, we saw Jose Mourinho do it with against Bodo Glimt in the Europa League. Or the conference, whatever it was last season.
Yeah, conference league.
So the reading of it, though, is you do this if you expect a reaction, a positive reaction. When you do this before an international break, and then, by the way, a lot of people say, oh, but Conte said what everybody already thinks, right? First of all, that's a bit of kind of a lazy trope. A lot of Spurs fans are angry, and they're angry with the players and with the club and with Conte, I think, equally, right? Secondly, you don't have a lot of skin in the game when your contract expires in less than 3 months. Like Antonio Conte's. So it's not like, oh, look, he's speaking truth to power. No, he's got nothing at stake here, right? Hmm. Do you say it when there's an international break and you're not going to see the players for 2 weeks? Is this the time to come out and say it? I'm not sure. A lot of people read this, oh, Conte's trying to get himself sacked. I'm like, why would he want to do that? What, so he gets like another 3 months' salary paid up now rather than over the course of the next 3 months? I don't understand. I think this is Conte being genuine, but Conte having anger management issues in certain situations.
Sure. But if you're the club now, if you're the owner and you hear him, you watch him saying that, and it went viral. Of course it went viral. What do you do, though?
I think you keep him until the end of the season. You have a word with him.
So you allow him to talk like that about his own bosses, basically.
I think a lot of people
talk like that about the bosses publicly, they'd be sacked.
Their boss has an ego. I don't think Daniel Levy has an ego in that sense, because he knows a lot of people feel that way, right? We've been here before. Jose Mourinho said very similar things to Conte. So I would assume there's a grain of truth in it. Pochettino might have said some of the same things too.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth that he said.
Pochettino may be more circumspect because he has a different personality and maybe wants to come back one day. But this is not something new. And it's something that if you're Daniel Levy, you can't have an ego about, I think.
I
would keep him till the end of the season, let him pay up. The players, you pointed this out before, they all have Champions League bonuses. They all want to be in the Champions League. Yeah. I don't think motivation is going to be an issue. They're still fourth in the table. That's right. Arsenal destroy Crystal Palace 4-1 as Bukayo Saka scores two and sets up another. Jules, the lead is 8 points, though City have a game in hand. And the head-to-head.
Yeah, I mean, the head-to-head doesn't really makes much of a difference, and they will obviously play each other on Wednesday, April 26th, which is huge. They played really well. Crystal Palace, who obviously sacked Patrick Vieira, we mentioned that in the last show, all over the place. There was never going to be a contest. The disappointment maybe is the goal that they conceded on set piece again. It's not the first time we mentioned that before, but apart from that, it was a very good win.
After being knocked out of the Europa League.
Yeah, it's good. Bukayo Saka, by the way, 12 goals, 10 assists, double-double for him this season, which is very impressive. A Filip Kostic goal gives Juventus a 1-0 win over Inter. The Gab, Simone Inzaghi, is furious with VAR.
Yeah, he's furious with VAR because Kostic, on Kostic's winner, there was a sequence of play in which the ball may or may not.
Yeah.
I think in one case it certainly did touch a Juve arm. Twice Vlahovic, once Rabiot.
Yeah.
Now, there's two things to say to this, right? First of all, worry about your crappy performance, horrible performance from Inter, horrible defending on the goal.
Yeah.
And yeah,
I mean, Denzel Dumfries on the goal. I mean, come on.
I don't know.
What is the common sense? What? I mean,
this is not the time to talk about VAR. Secondly, and I do have sympathy with VAR here, right? They took 4 minutes. They have to look at three separate incidents and offside. Now, TV pictures, frankly, are clear as mud. I think there probably was one on Vlahovic.
One where his arm is close to his
body. Where the arm is right close to his body. Yeah. Then you have to judge, does he get an advantage or whatever. But it was also a long sequence of play in which Inter were rubbish.
Yeah.
You know, this is something where, rather than making it an issue out of VAR and respect and whatever else, which, by the way, is not Simone Inzaghi, it's not how he normally rolls, just talk about, we had a bad game, we apologize to our fans, we think the goal should have been struck off, but whatever. Let's come back and do better next time. That's all you had to say, Simone.
Yeah, yeah.
A late goal from Ellis Sims means Chelsea are held to a 2-2 home draw by this Burnley-fied Sean Dyche Everton.
I like it.
Well, what did you make of their performance?
I thought Chelsea played well the first half, although it was too much on the left-hand side, not enough on the right-hand side. When they played a bit more on the right in the second half, the two goals kind of came from there. Well done to them. I just thought I was at the stadium the last half hour. It felt like Chelsea were a bit scared, didn't really know what to do. I thought the changes that Potter made, especially Pulisic and Gallagher, didn't make any sense at all. And in the end, they got done. Koulibaly makes a mistake and Sims plays it well, to be fair, especially that second touch after the control. But Chelsea should not go games like this.
Yeah, it felt like it was coming.
Definitely. Mattia Zaccagni, scores the only goal and Roger Ibanez gets himself sent off after half an hour as Lazio beat Roma to do the derby double and move into second place. Gab, this was a typical derby, right down to the two red cards, a final whistle and a fight in the dressing room.
That's right, the two red cards at the final whistle for Brian Cristante and Marisic. Of course, you know, you need to have a melee at the end to show
always
how much you care. Stupid because they're heading for suspension. Roger Ibanez, even dumber. Two yellow cards in half an hour. I think Mourinho, who was suspended for this game, his head would have exploded at that point. Roma showed me very, very little, even at 11v11.
You're right.
Afterwards, you know, he takes Dybala off, which basically means you're kind of giving up on set pieces. Leaves Belotti, who started ahead of Tammy. Mm. And then at the end, what happens? Claudio Lotito meets Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
And Mourinho says to Lotito, Claudio Lotito, the Lazio president, controversial Lazio president, says, hey, what are you looking at? And to which Lotito responds, I'm looking at you. Who are you? Why are you here? I'm the president of Lazio. You're not even supposed to be here because Mourinho's suspended.
Yeah.
And then there's another brawl in the tunnel.
Of course.
This is all very unedifying, Jules.
Yeah.
And I think very unnecessary. And like Mourinho was already suspended for this game, fairly, unfairly, whatever. But you can't bring everything down to a street brawl every game.
Yeah.
Jules, I waited this long to bring up Paris Saint-Germain. I can wait no longer. A home defeat to Rennes, and between this and Arsenal in the Europa League, are you going to blame Kim Kardashian for ruining your week?
Kim Kardashian's curse is real. I have to be honest here. Obviously, everywhere she goes, you know, the home team loses. Arsenal and PSG, who hadn't lost at home in the league for 2 years.
Now,
35 games in a row, unbeaten. And then she turns up with all her kids and all the squads. And then they have a shocking game, terrible. She has a Neymar shirt. He's not there, obviously. So, I mean, it was a car crash.
Did she have a shirt at the Emirates too when Arsenal went out to Sporting?
Her kids had, but I don't think
nobody
she
was wearing
had
a Pedro Gonzalez shirt or something.
No? Not for Sporting, okay. For sure. Right. Okay. I don't think she had an Arsenal one in her hand, like I saw her with a Neymar one. It was a car crash of a day, to be fair, one of the worst performances. I've had enough of Christophe Galtier now, so I'm going to stop naming him. I'm just going to stop saying his name. I'm going to call him the Marseille guy. And this team is going nowhere with him. And I know the problems are probably deeper than just the manager and who sat on the bench. However, he's showing again his limit. Juan Bernat as a centre back in a back three, really? Like, in which world did you think it was a good idea? Go back to a back four.
Everybody's injured.
Go back to back four. You've got enough to for back four. You've got enough for a back four gap. Danilo Bichiabu, then a left back, Bernat, if you want, Nuno Mendes. And then as a right back, you play Pembele. Very good. No need for a back three with Bernat. I never want to see a back three with Bernat in it. I never want to see Bernat as a centre back ever.
You're going to bring up all those chances Mbappe missed early?
No, but of course they had chances, not playing great. Two balls from Messi, two good finishes, good saves by Mandanda and Kylian. But the goals they conceded were terrible. And in the second half, Rennes could have had 3-4 easily. It was just a shocking game, a shocking defeat again. Galtier has lost, I think it's 7 in his 18 games since December 28. 7 out of 18. In what world this is acceptable? It's not. He will finish the season because he has to. He's got 1 year left on his contract. I never want to see him again after this season on the PSG bench. He's just not good enough. Right. He's a good coach for Saint-Etienne, Lille, Nice, wherever you want, those kind of clubs. He's not good enough for that kind of level.
How far back do you have to find a Paris Saint-Germain coach who you like less? Is it, I'm assuming it's sometime before Kumbore and Blanc, right?
Yeah, because even Poch, to be fair, who also lost 7 in his season, even has sympathy for him because at least he played for us. The other dude was born in Marseille. Like, he should have never been. Oh, my God. I don't
want it. It all comes out.
Borussia Dortmund at top of the Bundesliga, Gab. They destroyed Cologne 6-1. And even my boy Daniel Malen shines. Incredible.
That's right. How about that? The little Malen move? Like, how about that?
It was so good. I mean,
obviously, Adeyemi out, Brandt out. So that's why the Malinator is on the pitch.
Yeah.
But I thought one of the big things was Daoud came back in front of the back four. Remember, they had no Emre Can, no Özkan in this game. FCA are tough, not as tough as their coach Baumgart.
Who of course, we know.
Like, seriously, like, if we were to have a street fight, I would take Baumgart over just about everybody. And I love it because he plays the part with, like, the tight shirt.
Yeah, of course.
And he's got, like, I bet he does push-ups before he comes out. So that, like, his guns look even bigger. But whatever.
Guerrero in midfield again. What? Really good.
Sorry, who's that?
Guerrero,
yes.
Again. We said it last show.
This is more suited to him because, look, Ryerson is actually a left back, and not whatever position Guerrero plays in his head. You can let the guy run. He's got quality. No. Good performance.
That was good.
Manchester City beat up Burnley and our man Vinny 6-0 to also advance in the FA Cup. Erling Haaland gets a hat trick, and his reward is getting subbed almost straight away.
Of course.
It's 42 goals in 36 games this season. Jules, he's going to get the 50, I would assume.
You would think so.
There's an act of God.
There's 18 games potentially left now if they go all the way in every competition. Remarkable. I mean, we knew. I mean, certainly the way Burnley play, unless they would have parked the bus, which is not something they would have done anyway, that they were going to get beaten. 6-0 maybe is a lot. And I think they maybe just lost their heads a little bit because it was so overwhelming. Well done to Haaland again. Well done to City for taking this game really seriously, of course. And they're in the semi-final of the FA Cup where they were going to go back to Wembley again. Pep, by the way, lost his last 3 FA Cup semi-final. You know, this is their fifth in a row. They won the first one, but that's they lost the last 3. So,
yeah, but he's excited that he's not playing United in the semi-final.
Of course he is. Napoli destroyed Torino 4-0. Osimhen gets 2. Kvaratskhelia another 1. And even my boy Tongyan Dombele scores his first goal in Serie A. The lead is 19 points, God. Come on.
Yeah, I would have thought that this would be like sort of a natural letdown. You got the Champions League.
Yeah,
at some point,
you
take
still
a breather. No,
they
guys just keep going. They're a machine. Osimhen, when he jumps out of the stadium. Kvara, like, I don't know. I'm at a loss for words. It's interesting. So the lead is 19 points. And so They could potentially have a curious situation where, depending how things go, they could win the title before April 19th. And then on April 19th, when Juve's case is heard, because the lead is only 15 points over Juve.
Yeah, so the 4-point swing.
If Juve gets 4 points, then they could have to go and try to win the title again, depending on what comes out.
At least you have two parties, because they're going to win the title, whether it's Juve's points or not.
They're going to have many more than one party. Then it's going to be a nightly party in Naples. Antoine Griezmann opens the scoring as Atletico beat Valencia 3-0. Jules, unbeaten 10, and more importantly, they're playing really well.
Great.
They're balanced.
I mean, Valencia, as we know, they've played okay against Barcelona, for example. We said that away from home, they're terrible, and it was just too much much for them. Too much movement, which we rarely said about Atletico Madrid. Too much movement. There was a lot of things going on. I mean, even Thomas Lemar scored, to tell you like how off good bench, Atletico.
Yeah.
And with his head as well, by the way. But yeah, it was great. They could have had more goals than that. It's good. And they don't concede again, I think, 50% of their games now under El Cholo.
They imagine if Memphis had his finishing boots on.
Yeah,
and also, Sid Lowe, our colleague, who is too busy to join us on a Monday when we invite him on the show.
I'm not surprised.
He reckons Griezmann is the league MVP in La Liga. Controversial decision. But you know what? He might be right.
He might. I mean, certainly he's on top form right now. Zlatan Ibrahimovic becomes the oldest goal scorer in the history of Serie A. 41 in 165 days. Who did he beat, by the way?
Billy Costacurta.
Yes, nice. Also on a pen. But it's a bitter day for Milan, Gab, who lose to Udinese 3-1. Fourth place is hanging out of the thread.
Yeah, they got a one-point lead, and obviously they'll be pushed even further down if you ever get the points back.
Yeah.
He had to retake the penalty, but like, it's not really about Zlatan, it's about how terrible Milan were in
really
this game.
Bad.
They were bad before
really
against Salernitana as well. There's this myth that, you know, the problem was at the back and they were leaking too many goals and then he fixed it by moving to the back three. No. The problem is at the other end. I have it in my column. I think their rolling XG over the last 10 games, when the streak started at the start of January, was 1.88. Now it's 1.02. Whereas their goals conceded in terms of XG have remained roughly the same, around 0.98 or 0.89 or something, which isn't bad.
No.
But the real problem is
you don't create enough and score.
They're
enough.
Not creating enough. Yeah. And when you're creating chances, you're keeping the ball further away from your goal. And by the way, that back three, and everybody loved Malik Mashaw was terrible. Tomori was really, really poor
as well.
They don't get the coverage from the midfield. This back three was not a cure.
Terrible.
They need to go back, find
terrible.
Their intensity, and do better. They need to do it quickly before they have, if they want to be in the Champions League next year. Otherwise, they'll just have to win it.
Yeah.
Olympique Marseille beat Will Still and Rams as they hang on to a 2-1 win. Jules, this was very nervy at the end. Squeaky bum for our man Igor Tudor Sedan. The cap is 7 points.
7 points, yeah. 7 points. I still
imagine if Gaultier screws this one up.
I still don't think PSG will crumble, but you never know, seeing how bad.
That's because Marseille aren't good. This isn't good.
Reims were better. Reims
were a lot
better.
You're conceding everything in sight at the end of the game.
No. True. I give you that. But away from home, Marseille are one of the best teams in the big five leagues. They are outstanding. Sometimes they ride their luck a little bit, like in this game, for sure, because Reims were really, really good. That second half was wonderful. They hit the post, they hit the woodwork in the last minute of the game. Flo Balogun, who scored, by the way, before, so now he scored against PSG, against Monaco, against Marseille. It's an incredible season for him. And they deserve more than the defeat. But it's his first defeat, as we said, in 19 games now. It's incredible. Well done to Marseille for showing that character, though, to still win it. But there will be better. There will be more wins and more great results for Reims, because they are really a special team with one now, a special young manager as well. Mason Mount, Gab, as a new agent, need a few wings at roof. How will that impact his contract talks, or will it impact even?
Well, it's interesting. This is actually the third person who's looked after him.
Yeah.
It's a lot of changes. He was followed by his dad, Tony, and before that, he was with Stellar. Normally, when you change agents, you do it because the agent's bringing something to the conversation.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he has something lined up, but he's not going to start over from scratch. I think it's a tough spot, and it's amazing how I think he should be an asset to the club, but right now, that's not what he is. Real Sociedad and Betis both win, so the gap in the race for fourth remains 3 points. In La Liga, Jules, care to make a prediction? Which one of these two gets it?
It's going to be, I think, going to the wire. You can see them being very close to each other until the end. They both were knocked out, by the way, in midweek in Europe. So they really have only the league to focus on. I want Real Sociedad to do it. I just like Imanol. I like what they do. Even if they went through a really big dip, this win was huge this weekend. Scoring two, not conceding as well. Very, very good for the morale. So I would say La Real for me.
If Betis wins it, they need to build a statue to the manager.
Yeah, that's very true. Many of us remember Lionel Messi's penalty pass to Luis Suarez in 2016. But when Rayo Vallecano attempted it against Girona this weekend, it didn't go that well. It was more like Arsenal against Man City and Pires and Thierry Henry.
I was going to say, because I'm really old, I remember Pires against Thierry Henry.
Oh, my God.
This was Oscar Trejo to Isi Palazón. I don't know why you do this.
So they missed one, and then they got that one retaken. So it was their second chance as well.
I think the reason that they did it was he missed the first one, which he took normally. There was encroachment, and they said, oh, look, the referee just whistled for encroachment. This means nobody's going to encroach, and so we have a better chance of doing it. But the miss was just so bad. It was almost like he sent it to the corner flag.
Yeah.
At least get it on target from there.
So you know what I was thinking? And I rewatched it a lot of times to see. But at some point, Trejo must say to Easy, let's do it, right? He must say something to him. Otherwise, how does the guy know?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
And maybe that's where if you're the defender, you're thinking, hang on, maybe this is what they're planning, and maybe you're more on your toes and you react quickly, because to be fair, they react quite quickly to.
But he still gets the ball and gets a shot off from 5 yards out.
By, I don't know. It was crazy, man. It was crazy. And to be fair, Girona by then were 2-1 down, then score late to make it 2-2, which really the afternoon for Trejo and Rayo Vallecano was just horrible.
Let's go to the big game in the Eredivisie as Ajax lose at home to Feyenoord 3-2. Jules, this was big as Feyenoord have a 6-point lead with 8 games to go. They're very close to the Marcotti principle.
Yeah, you're right. They're very, very true. They're very close. They were 3 points clear, obviously. They took the lead and then Ajax, to be fair, came back at home to win 2-1, to lead 2-1, sorry. But Feyenoord, I love this team. It's a wonderful team. Arne Slot is doing an amazing job when you think that they lost so many key players in the summer. And then we're rebuilding with more young players, more signing from a bit everywhere, Brazil, Mexico, everywhere you want it. And now to play like this, well done to Santi Jimenez, by the way, the Mexican striker who scored again and was, I thought, really good. Gasruda with the winner in the 86th minute. Can you imagine?
By the way, did you enjoy watching Santi Jimenez at the World Cup?
No, but he should have been there. Another good one from Tata Martino, by the way. Good riddance. But this Feyenoord team, by the way, could also go really far in Europe. And it's just amazing. Well done to them. Really well done.
Got Jose Mourinho standing in their way in the Europa League.
We would love a remake of that final. Lucas Leiva has announced his retirement from football after it was discovered that he had a heart condition gap.
Yeah, like this is, he came back, he joined Grêmio, obviously spent 5 years at Lazio before that was at Liverpool. He's a class act, one of the really, really nice guys. Good guys.
Yeah, lovely.
Really loved by the fans. He played with tremendous intensity. Came back, obviously played with Grêmio in December. They said, oh, we better check this out. I'm just grateful that, you know,
he got the medical attention
that he needed.
Definitely.
And he's at peace with himself.
Yeah,
and
he had 36. He had a great 36. You know.
This is back on Friday, Jules, but how about Alexander Isak's injury time winner for Newcastle against Forest? They're 2 points out of fourth place with 2 games in hand, and in the end, it could all come down to this penalty.
Exactly. Huge win. His first goal, by the way, was quite special as well. And then I don't know what Nyakate does. He hasn't played for Forest since August. The guy comes back in, the team starts. And then, like,
I don't know.
Like, his arm was so high. It was, like, literally touching the glass. I was like, dude, what are you doing, man?
I don't know that I've seen such uncoordinated.
It was ridiculous. And he looked distraught, and fair enough. Because same for Newcastle that you said, he might go down to this win. If Forest go down, it could well be for that point there that they lost. Really incredible end of the game. We've talked a fair bit about VAR controversy already today, Gab. But I think the Egyptian second division game between Al Nasser and Suez took it to the next level. Tell us more about it.
All right. So I absolutely love this story. I had to educate myself on it. But essentially, it's 2-1 to Suez. And then Al Nasser score a goal to make it 2-2. This is right at the end or in injury time or whatever. And the players all start appealing because the goal was offside. Right. The goal was quite obviously offside. This match was on.
But not given.
Yeah, it was no, the goal was given.
But the offside was not given.
But the guy was standing offside.
Yeah.
There's no VAR at that level. So what does the referee do? Somehow there's a fan who's streaming the game on his phone and he shows him the replay. And
so
he's
a
like,
human VAR, like a human, like a
essentially,
VR.
Yeah, like bring your own phone. It's not how it's supposed to work. They're going to open an investigation. Suez later scored in the 15th minute of injury time because, as you imagine, a lot of controversy there to make it 3-1. I'm of the opinion that as long as you get to the right decision,
exactly.
And this was the right decision.
Completely.
Equally, you can't have selective VAR where whichever fan is quickest with his phone goes and shows it to the referee. So I wouldn't be surprised if he gets suspended. Lens beat Angers and are third in Ligue 1. But Jules, the reason I'm bringing this up is what they did with their shirts.
That's right, Gav. So all the players wore their actual numbers because you have to play with the numbers you're registered in with the league. But they changed the names to one of the teammates' name to fight against racial discrimination. I think on Tuesday is the International Day Against Racial Discriminations. So, for example, Seko Fofana, the captain, the Ivorian international, took Jean-Louis Leca, the goalkeeper, who's white. He took his name. I think Adrien Thomasson.
And vice versa, right?
Sorry?
And vice versa.
And vice versa, exactly. Same with Thomasson and Pereira Costa, for example. And everybody within that team, which I thought was great to raise awareness.
Kind of like I'm in the skin of somebody who
exactly.
is.
Exactly. And then we all together with the same team, with the same, you know, we are the same people. We're all equal. And I thought that was really good. And that had really good exposure.
Yeah.
And people talked a lot about it, which is great.
It feels a little hokey and a little French. But then the fact that we're talking about it.
Exactly.
And we don't
That's
talk about
wanted.
It when, like, you know, teams elsewhere, like, you know, just walk out with, like, the show races and red card badges or when they
do UDT. The... We saw in La Liga this
weekend.
When they
did in La Liga, where they all wore those weird, ugly shirts. Yeah. Like, whatever keeps raising awareness that this is still in the forefront, and you can say it's performative, but, you know, we are talking about it.
Exactly.
And I think at least that's a little baby step forward.
Yeah. Cristiano Ronaldo scores a free kick to Q Al Nasser, 2-1 comeback win against ABBA. Gab, it was his first free kick goal in 3 years. It's something like 90 attempts or ridiculous.
I think everybody remembers the free kicks, some of the free kicks he scored when he was younger. There's a real randomness. Unless your name is, you know, unless you're the late Sinisa Mihailovic, or unless you're Juninho Pernambucano, or James Ward-Prowse, or Andrea Pirlo, there's a certain randomness to this, especially if you hit them the way he hits them, which, you know, he tends to hit them with power.
Yeah.
This idea that he's some sort of master free kick taker. There's a lot of other things he does exceptionally well. This is not one of them. I'm happy for him. He scored. I'm happy for them. They won. I think they're still chasing. They're still 4 points back, something like that. But yeah, let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's put a pin in this. Jules, that brings us to an end.
That's all.
We got to come back on Thursday.
Yeah.
I'd love to say there's a massive show. So much stuff coming up between now and Thursday. But there isn't, because it's international. Because it's
international
week.
Right? We love international.
But don't worry, we'll find stuff to talk about. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.